Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful, as always, for each of you who joined us tonight, for those who have joined us in the past. And we look forward to some substantive dialogue this evening. You're listening to Talk Straight, as you heard, and we endeavor to do just that tonight. 657-383-0944 is the number to call into the studio tonight. Now, this weekend, on Sunday, July the 4th, the United States of America turns 245 years old. Now, that is since it declared independence. Some historians like to mark the birthday at September 17, 1789, which would knock off a few years, about 9 years to be exact. However, I am of the school of thought, the historical position, that its true origin was when they declared independence, although they had another form of government other than the United States Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. Yet it was still the same individuals that formed or established themselves, organized formally under the United States Constitution in 1789. All right? Now, states has been revered for some time as one of the most powerful nations in the free world. It is also one of the youngest nations. It promotes to all people around the globe that your human rights are protected by the U.S. Constitution should you become a citizen or within its boundaries. Based on this notion, many people claim it to be their country. European, Hispanic, Afro-Americans, African-Americans, and most importantly, the original people, Native Americans. Now tonight, what we're going to do is speak from the topic, One Nation Under God. One Nation Under God. That is our topic tonight. And you'll find that in this one nation, there are, rightfully so, differing views. Positions of identity, of allegiance or place in this one nation under God. June 2nd, this July 1st, I'm sorry, 2021. Can you believe that? It's already the seventh month of this year, 2021. Now, I know some people were glad that it came because what that signaled that 2020 was over, all right? But nonetheless, here we are in this present moment, and time is still moving on, and it is not waiting on any of us, any of us. Jeremiah, the 17th chapter, verses 9 through 10, reads like this. The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. Beloved, is that how we feel and what motivates us can sometimes be tricky. But the Almighty know what's in our heart, even and in our mouth, our mind, before we speak or act it out. And if we allow him to search us, we can keep ourselves in due bounds. As you know, that there are a great many tensions around the United States of America over the last year and 1 year. But this was brewing, though. And certain ethnicities or populations have long felt as though they were on the periphery of society, had little to no place. You all know that even in the athletics, the sports, and things of that nature, venues, activities, events that brought all kinds of people together across ethnic and racial and all sorts of lines, that has been challenged. The notion of pledging allegiance to the flag. Some of us are not old enough to remember when that was a mandatory thing in school. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The question is, what meaning does those words have for each of us? Now, tonight, what I want to do is to kind of hint at the original people here on the land and some other latecomers, if you will, and what their experiences have been historically and kind of indicate how they feel they fit into this one nation. Now, because of his constitution, there's broad latitude for anyone that aligns itself with the values and with the precepts and dictates of American ideology to benefit from it. Okay? So where did this pledge come from? Well, what it is simply, as you know, is a pledge to the United States, right? It's an expression of allegiance to the flag that represents it and that republic that you heard made reference in the pledge. The fellow by the name of Captain George Thatcher Balch, who was a Union Army officer during the Civil War, was most noted for introducing this formal allegiance, stated allegiance as a pledge. And then another gentleman who was a teacher, he took it and added a few things to it. But the form of the pledge that we have present in 2021, and you don't hear it often stated or recited in schools anymore and in a lot of places. There are some places that it's still used, but not as much as it used to be. Congress adopted this pledge that I just recited for you about 50 years, a little over 50 years, but maybe 50 some years or so, in 1942. there are, again, people who have varying opinions. I had a gentleman on this show question me about my United States flag that I wear on my lapel. And he has a right to his opinion about it and his feelings about it. That's the beautiful thing about being American. The Constitution allows you to speak out against it and to express any disagreement or perhaps disdain you may have for it, but yet benefit from the protection that it has. Isn't that something? Sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? Doesn't even sound real. Sounds like too good to be true. But yet, that's the construct that we have. So we honor and respect all of that. We honor and respect all that. So tonight, in this topic, One Nation Under God, what we hope to walk away from this discussion with is a little bit better understanding of how and why all of us that live here in the United States of America, albeit from various experiences and perspectives of what America means to us, still our country. We could leave. We can get up and move somewhere else to another country. That's a possibility. We can stay here. But because we are a nation of laws, it is imperative in the interest of all of us being able to get along and nobody being treaded upon, right? It's imperative that we follow those laws such that peace and order and harmony may be sustained. Now, give you a little, just a little bit of tidbit of history about some subgroups, some ethnicities, some historical ethnic groups that has shaped and made significant contribution to this nation we call America. We cannot tell that story correctly without first identifying the Native Americans, or as some historians would call them, Paleo-Indians. Now, if you're going to start out talking about anybody other than them first, in my view, you went off the rails. Because if you correctly tell the history, you cannot not mention them. So, in his work, A People's History of the United States, the American historian Howard Zinn describes how there was a well-established culture and a people in the geographic region we commonly know or see and call South and North America, and we're in the northern part of it. It's not definitively known how or when these Native or Paleo-Indians first settled in the Americas. And the present-day United States that we have territorial jurisdiction over. There is a significant theory, though, about when they came, and it suggests that these people migrated from Eurasia across the Beringia and some sort of land bridge that connected Siberia to present-day Alaska, very cold region. And this was said to have happened during somewhere around the Ice Age. It's believed that these people spread southward throughout the Americas and possibly as far south as the Antarctic Peninsula. A little geography. Now, this migration is estimated to have began somewhere around 30,000 years ago and perhaps continued another 10,000 years ago when the land bridge became submerged by a rising sea level. And that caused the ending of the glacier period as it was identified historically. These early inhabitants, called Paleo-Americans, soon diversified, started to break off into different, in fact, hundreds of culturally distinct nations and tribes, as we would refer to them today, derived. Right? Now, I could be wrong, but I believe we can all agree that the land and the people called America was not lost to these people. They didn't have to discover it. It was already there. It was theirs. These inhabitants that preceded, these latecomers, as I call them, which leads me to another ethnicity that we have here, and that's the Hispanic, Hispanic American. The term Hispanic broadly refers to people, nations, and cultures that have a historical link to Spain. That's where the Spanish come in. Now, it applies to the region once colonized by the Spanish Empire in the Americas, particularly Latin America. The Spaniards who arrived in the South American region, the Bahamas, Cuba, and Hispaniola in around 1492, you heard the story of Christopher Columbus, an explorer who got lost, really. Won't get into those details. But nonetheless, that's the introduction. Puerto Rico did not bring women on their first expedition. They didn't bring them. The explorers made it with the Tiano women. And they bore children that were referred to as mestizo children as a result of this engagement. So these explorers came over here from Spanish origin, and they began to miscegenate with the native women, the Tiano women, created what's known as mestizo children. Often when we hear the people and of their migration across North American borders, we're speaking of the mixed children of Native American and Spaniards. That's how it all began. So you have the natives here that were already, these Tiano women of various breakoffs and tribes, that began to mate with these explorers, these Spanish explorers. Spain and Portugal were right next to one another. And as they came here, they didn't bring women with them. But we hooked up with the women that were here already. That's one way we can say it. Okay? Understandably, there's this feeling that they have a right to the wealth and prosperity of their forefathers of America, despite how the hookup came about. Can you see already how this evolved? There's this fight about who is legal and illegal and so forth and so on. And many of them would argue that we preceded you. Native Americans or the Paleo-Indians and the Spaniards that came over began first making a new population or culture or generation that are mixed. You see? And they're holding. I won't get into all the other socioeconomic elements of the migration and things of that nature. I'm just trying to show you how historically there was a place for all of these subgroups. We're going to get to that. I know some of you want to know about you. I ain't done yet. Give me a few more minutes, and then we'll try to bring it all in. And I got the Funkadelics waiting back, too. They're going to help me talk about this one nation, Just hold tight. So we see how this mixture of Hispanic culture or Spanish culture, Spaniards, and the Paleo-Americans or the Native Americans began to come together and form a subgroup. All of them are part of the American experience, though. That's the thing we walk away with. European Americans, how did they get here? I think. How the other European Americans? Consider this. There were European settlers that came from a variety of social and religious groups, including adventurers, soldiers, farmers, and even tradesmen. That's what attracted them there. Now, a variety has been an American characteristic from the colonial times to present. Settlers traveling to the new continent were of various European origins. Well, some of those include Dutch, New Netherlands, Swedes, Finns, New Swedens, English Quakers of Pennsylvania, the English Puritans of New England, the English settlers of Jamestown, what was called the worthy poor of Georgia. Nonetheless, these groups built colonies of distinctive social, religious, political, and economic styles or forms. You follow me? And over time, even non-British colonies were taken over, and most of its inhabitants were assimilated into the others. The colonies developed legalized systems of slavery that were centered around the Atlantic slave trade. What most people perhaps are not aware of is that efforts were used the Paleo-Americans or the Native Americans as slaves. That was not so effective because they understood the surrounding well enough to avoid such subjugation from the colonizers. And then they used some of these people who came over here as prisoners and in other indigent circumstances that looked like them. Yes, you can imagine that didn't work too well very long. And then some things happened. Events took place that created a new opportunity for labor force around the world. Around 1515, Bishop Bartholomew gave permission to Spain to begin taking human beings from what we call the continent of Africa and to bring them over to Spain and to use them as a labor force. This set a tone and an example for this so-called New World or discovered country we call America. And I say so-called because it wasn't lost, as I pointed out earlier. Ask the natives if they were lost. Well, nonetheless, it factored into, as Basil Davidson writes, the transatlantic slave trade, and there are many other books about it as well. Through this process, the founding fathers of the United States of America seem to have functionally defined manhood as being a requirement of American independence. And I'll tell you why I say that. And this is my, as a student of history, this is my conclusion. Here's why I say that. The formal end to the American Civil War brought many opportunities to people who were formerly slaves and subjugated to labor against their will and who had origins over in the continent of Africa. But specifically, the opportunity that I'm making reference to is for Afro males to become a man. In the context of the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It goes on to say, to secure these rights, governments are established among them. Now, why do you say that, Doctor? Simply because even at the ending of slavery, after the passing of the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and the 15th Amendment, which allowed rights to vote, it seems to me from then to present, there haven't been a unified effort for individuals to really identify them in the context of these all men that establish government and that give consent to the government. That speaks to today what I want to talk about, African Americans who feel as though they have little to no place in America and no reason to salute the flag or anything like that. We have to understand that because of the perfidious institution of slavery in America, anyone would have a nasty taste in their mouth, including yours truly, right? But we have a choice, beloved, to either live in that period and be stuck there or to grow and move beyond, take advantage of the opportunities we have today. And today there's an opportunity to read, to understand, and embrace the principles of Americanism and find a place for you. Now, you can get up and go. You can always do that. That's always an option. But if you're like me, born and raised in the ghetto of America, and thanks be to God, I survived some things, and I'm here today. And I've learned how to not allow that to be a crutch or not allow myself to be stuck there, but to find opportunities that are available and that I have a right to as an American citizen. And I believe that if you find out how to place yourself in the context of all men who are created equal and endowed by their Creator, to pursue life, liberty, and that. But watch this. You have the power to give consent to the government that you either love or hate. Wow. Say that again, Doctor. I think I will. You have the power to give consent to the government that you either love or hate. I submit to you that there are a lot of good people who simply don't know how to be about giving their consent. There's a process. There's a process. And if we all follow it, you understand what I'm saying? We can benefit from it. But if you don't follow it, chances are you won't benefit from it. When we look at, again, chattel slavery as it existed, as it was practiced in North America. Lerone Bennett, the late historian, African-American historian, he places it beginning somewhere around 1619 in his book Before the Mayflower. And technically, I say technically, it went to about 1863. But formally, it was constitutionally ended in 1865. This was an economic institution, let's understand it, which forcibly owned and violated the rights of humans of Afro descent that were now in America, not necessarily considered as citizens, though. Now, unlike indentured servitude that were practiced in other parts of the globe, during this colonial period, chattel slavery was planned. It was intentional about banning males of the right to what the framers identified as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Before you go get mad, realize that that was a long time ago now. And you could use the energy from your anger to build yourself something in 2021. This is July the 1st, 2021. So I would encourage you to look at this coming 4th of July, the National Day of Celebrating Independence from Great Britain and laying the path of American freedom. I'd like to encourage you to consider, how can I take advantage of those precepts, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Because you're a citizen, and you have a right to that, like anybody else. Guess what? There is an argument to be made, as I just pointed out earlier, that the Spaniards or Hispanics have a right. Not necessarily because something they did in this present generation, but when we look at the structure and the formation historically of the American experience in 245 years and beyond that, what you can see is who was here before, who came after, and who wound up being here at the present. You hear what I said? Who was here before, who were latecomers afterwards, and who wind up now being here today. Irregardless, there are certain laws and principles that identify the rights privileges of every American. When we talk about the 4th of July and the flag, what we're talking about is just one nation under God that many strive to make undivided or indivisible, ringing with liberty and justice for everybody. Sometimes we disagree, brothers and sisters. I mean blood brothers and sisters fall out. They have a disagreement. Okay, get over it. That's still your brother. That's still your sister. Some folk want to couch it in terms of white and black. Get over it. Cut either one of them, they're going to bleed big blood. Open them up, they got the same organ. Heart, testing, eyeball, tongue. You understand what I'm saying? We function. We have emotions. We have aspirations. Yes, there were individuals who did some heinous things decades ago. And this relatively young nation's history, what we can do today to move beyond that and improve on that, rectify those things. We don't have to live in the anger of yesterday. Listen, I recognize that some pretty ugly things happened. But what's interesting to me is how that same ugly behavior and practice have been in many ways, particularly in urban America, has been trained and turned on your brothers and sisters near you in urban America. Let's strive to understand how we can rid all of it, okay, and find the rightful opportunities that belong to you as an American. Let me reiterate that you always have the option, whatever your religious preferences are, whatever your social preferences are, you always have the option of cutting out of here and going somewhere else. Many have. W.E.B. Du Bois, probably one of the most powerful examples. He left America frustrated that his efforts to educate, empower, and uplift African-American people fail on many levels. He wound up going to Ghana, Africa, where he took his last breath. James Baldwin, another prolific literary genius, voice in the Afro-American plight, left America. There were others. I understand Tina Turner got up and cut at it. But singer, now I'm saying. My point is that you could do that. Most of us can't afford it. And I have lived here all of my life, and I'm going to take advantage of the opportunity to find life, liberty, and happiness right here. One day I hope to travel abroad some more. I did a little bit, but to do some more. And maybe one day we'll get a coconut tree or something and post a tent up around it. You understand what I'm saying? I don't know. But for right now, this is home. This is home. We're going to make the best we can of it. When I see what you call white, when I see what you call Mexican, when I see what you call other folk, even Asian, guess what? Those my brothers and sisters, too. We can get along in America. You do you, I do me. You understand what I'm saying? We ain't got to have no problem. We ain't got to have nobody's problem. No, not at all. Two questions that we ask, and I'll bring in the Funkadelics that are standing by for us. Talk about one nation under God. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're speaking from the topic, one nation under God. There is a place for us all. We don't have to be at one another's throat. We don't have to be upset, depressed, sad, despondent, or none of that. You ain't got to do that. You know what I said? You do not have to do that. All right? How does one become an American citizen? I hope that's a question we can answer. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the Funkadelic. Let them talk to us about One Nation Under God. And you give me a call here. You watch me on Facebook. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you. Give us a call here. The floor will be yours at 657-383-0944. That's it. Call right now. You'll be in the studio. We can hear your voice. We can hear your thoughts. And we respect that. And I want to reiterate that I understand that some of my listening audience or followers have heard others kind of monopolize online, and we will do make every effort to make sure you are heard. And we will just, you know, you may have different opinions and ideas about things. That's fine. You know, say what you have to say and respectfully allow someone else to voice their position. Somewhere in the middle, we'll all walk away with something, though. Okay? All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Sounds good. At the end of the day, all of us have something valuable that we can contribute to making the United States what we want it to be and making our society what we want it and think it should be. The Funkadelic said it like this, One Nation. That's One Nation. You have to keep moving. Yeah.
Don't tell me now.
Where they said it's just one nation, not two nations, not two different factions or groups of people, one nation under a groove, they say. But Balch will say one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. 657-383-0944. I will keep the phone lines open and continue to speak with you. If you follow us on Facebook, this is your opportunity. Shoot us a question or comment here. In fact, what I'll do while we're here talking is I will post a question, and maybe you could respond to that for me. Here's the first question for tonight. Here's the first question for tonight. I'll post a question, and maybe we can get you all to respond to them, and we can kind of go like that tonight. All right? If you follow us on Facebook, go ahead and check it out there. First question. How does one become an American citizen? How does one become an American citizen? That's the question. Well, I'd love to have you join us in this dialogue. Let me pose another question as I wait on your call. 657-383-0944. Excuse my voice. Here's another question that we can consider and we can together strive to answer tonight. Now, why would you do that, Doctor? What value does this have? Because this provides particularly our young folk, many who are angry and who are looking for some answers, rightfully so. And oftentimes they don't find out really who they're mad at until they start pulling the covers up, moving the rug, and they realize the real frustration comes right back at themselves, their parents and those who were nearest to them. That's another story, though. Second question is, given all of the turbulent experiences of minorities, I just cited some minority groups in my monologue earlier, throughout American history, should members of the majority population be held responsible for what has happened in the past? That's in the present. We hear a lot of this about white guilt and things of that nature. And really, when you look at it, it has no true basis. Okay? Some people don't like the fact that rich people in America have a tendency to be able to control a good portion of wealth. Okay? I get it. Here's a question you can ask yourself. How did they get rich, part A? And how can I take advantage of some of the same methodologies, part B? As opposed to being mad at them about their money. You understand what I'm saying? Now, again, you can do what you want to with your time and your energy. I'm just suggesting some ways that it can be profitable for you without being destructive or harmful toward anybody else. That's the question. Given all the turbulent experiences, there have been some rough ones, that minority group, African-Americans, Hispanics, right? And now there's this concern about Asians and other groups, Middle Easterners. All that they've been through, should members of the majority, right now, whites or Caucasian make up, I think, 73 to 75% of the American population. African Americans make up now still about 13.6, something like that, based on the last census count. It's the Hispanic population that has grown in the last couple of generations. But should the majority population be held to account for what has happened 200, 100 years ago? And if so, to what extent? But more importantly, what responsibility do I have for my own plight, my own existence? Okay? So we got two questions up there, and I'll just throw a third one out here, and we'll talk from them. Hopefully you'll help me answer them. I'll strive to answer them while we're on the air. Excuse me, here tonight. But hopefully you'll help me. You'll assist me in the process of answering these questions tonight. All right, that's what we'll do. 657-383-0944. That is the number you can call right now. If you do it, you'll get in. And you can get in where you fit in. Amen? Okay. This ain't church. This ain't church. But you can get in where you fit in. And guess what? It'll work for you. Third question. What does Native American, Hispanic, European, and African-American share in common as citizens of the United States? What does Native American, Hispanic, European, and African-American share in common as citizens of the United States of America? What do we share in common? We can always find things that are, and reasons to be oppositional. We can look for holes to poke at other people. But can you find some commonalities, some threads of similarities that we can build upon? Remember, I was talking about this. When you used to be able to go to a good old Chicago Bears versus Green Bay or New York, and everybody in the stands, even though you're on a different team, they're feeling out there. You feel like an American. You're together. Good old basketball game. Take me out to the ball game. Baseball. Somehow, someone, something has infiltrated what used to be a very pure activity that we all can share together and use it as a weapon against the unity of American citizens. Are we going to allow that? Should we? Regardless of what your ethnicity is. You've heard me lay out the various ethnicities. Yeah, let's talk about it. Should we allow that to happen? Maybe we should. 657-383-0944. That is the number to call right now into the studio. And, of course, you can post your question or your comment. Perhaps you disagree with me. I'm very much interested in hearing your position. And I'll tell you why. It places me in a position where I might be able to learn something. I can go back and check myself. Yeah, yeah. And if I find that I am in error, guess what? It only makes me a better man. So perhaps you can help me. 657-383-0944. We're talking from the topic, One Nation Under God. That's all of us. Look how fat-headed and good-looking I am. That includes me, too. You and I. You know, I can't help that I'm fat-headed. I can't even help that I'm good-looking. It is what it is. You understand what I'm saying? Shoot me a question or a comment here tonight. You follow us on Facebook, or if you listen to us on the Blog Talk radio platform there, give us a call. Either way, I'd love to entertain your thoughts. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. Listen, Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Ruben Dockery. And we go to the phone line. Welcome, caller. Appreciate you joining us tonight. Question coming?
I'm just tuning in, Pastor Dockery. What's going on?
Hey, man, I know who that is. I know who that is.
Hey. Pastor Rick, hey, man. All right, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How they treating you, man?
Man, I'm maintaining, brother. Just keeping it in perspective. Staying the focus that I've learned how to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy to do, but I've learned to continue to trust that if I just stay with it, that it'll work itself out.
Absolutely. Pastor, yes, I recently had the occasion to be in the presence of, he didn't tell me his age, but he struck me to be maybe 20 to 30 years old, young brother. African-American male, but in his countenance, his hair was really nappy, and his face was obviously hadn't been washed in a while, and his clothes were dirty and things of that nature. But by chance, we were face-to-face with one another having a conversation, and I won't go into all the details because I really don't want to get into his personal, business and what have you. The point I make here is when I listen to the young cat, man, little brother was deep, man. You know, he typically looked like what people would call some vagabond, a homeless person that nobody should pay attention to. In that short time, man, I said, wow, this cat right here, he got a lot to offer. You understand what I'm saying? But I think
not
it's
hard
fair
to
say, yeah, I think it's fair to say he lacked a platform to share his greatest potential contribution. And, you know me, I'm trying to find out, man, what can we do to get you right and get you in a position where you can make this work for you? You understand what I'm saying? I know you know that well. It was obvious that he had studied some and was to some degree learned and had considered some things, and wasn't like he had an empty head, man. You know what I mean? Wasn't like he had an empty head. In this conversation about One Nation Under God, how does that strike you? What does that sound like to you, Pastor?
I'm actually more into the guy from hearing that about what you were saying about him. He sound more to me that reminds me of a messenger.
Mm.
That's what that person reminds me of, you know. Hold on, Pastor Doc, I got to move. Hold on for a second.
All right, go right ahead. So Pastor Wallace joined back with in just a second. But, yeah, I would agree with Pastor Wallace. It does seem like this young man had a powerful thought or a message that perhaps could be transformative and shared with someone. But the dynamics of his quality of life, his day-to-day life, were out of balance with apparently the reality of a certain process he used to be able to sustain himself. Good brother, though. Good young brother, and There was only so much that I can do, but I did enjoy our intellectual stimulating dialogue there for the period of time that we had it. So I'll go back to our first question, 657-383-0944. I'm just waiting on you to call. We're keeping the phone lines open. We were doing 1 hour and a half shows in the beginning. And we've been doing this, in case you're new to the show, since 2016. August 2016. But God has blessed us to be able to continue to be here as much as we have and strive to do that. So we're keeping the phone lines open here. We're going to try to make ourselves available to you as long as we can tonight. Typically, it's a two-hour show. But you give me a call. Don't hesitate. Don't you be afraid now. Call me. 657-383-0944. Call me now. Go ahead. Pick up the phone. Give me a call. Sorry. And, you don't want to call? You don't want to call? Well, shoot me a message here on Facebook. So. Give me your thoughts. I'll give you a penny for your thoughts. Let me hear what's on your mind. We got a little more time. Yeah, we got a little more time. We got about just a little under an hour that we can chop it up tonight. Join me. I look for Pastor Wallace join us back here in a little bit, but this first question that I posed to our discussion tonight in relationship to one nation under God, how does one become an American citizen? Well, you know, there's this thing called the U.S. Constitution, and it defined that process or outlined those parameters. Largely, if you're born here, you're born on American soil or in American territory, that makes you an American citizen. Wherever there's American sovereign as a nation, that makes you an American citizen. But then if you were not born here and you moved here from another country, perhaps, you can be naturalized, right, as an American citizen. Now, I got a good brother on from Selma, Alabama, Brother Dunn. I'm going to yield the floor to him to talk about dual citizenship and how one can become a dual citizen. But we're talking about, from the topic, Don, one nation under God. They say indivisible with liberty and justice. Is that a real, or can that happen, Don, or is that just a pipe dream? Welcome.
I say, Mr. Dockery, you know, dual nationality, that's a really deep topic. And when I say dual nationality, first time I heard that was in Chicago. I was on the South Side, and it was a brother that was tied in with the L. Rookins, but he was tied in with the Morris Divine National Movement. And he understood dual nationality as it relates to our people. And our people don't understand dual nationality because we weren't taught. We weren't taught nothing about nationality. And it is sad, but really, the way I look at it now, European people cannot teach our people about their nationality. Only we can teach our people about our nationality.
What is that, Don? What is, you said our nationality. When you say our people.
Well, it's many nations in Africa, Mr. Dockery. Huh?
I'm not beating you up, guys. When I challenge you on that, but I hope you'll appreciate that everybody that looked like you and I don't consider themselves unified with us. You realize that, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it's because they're unconscious. And like I said, and you know what? I'm glad I met the brother. And, you know, I'm 61 now. Con Bay is gone. But I'm glad I met that brother because he brought me to a whole nother world. Just like right now I'm working at Raceway. Mo is from Yemen. And I was looking on my thing the other night. Yemen gained its independence, I think, in 62. And I was born in 59. It's like, wow, they're a young nation. They gained their independence from Great Britain. So what I'm saying, Mr. Dockery, is our people that was brought here on the Atlantic slave trade, they know what they was doing when they took our language. They know what they was doing when they took our religion. Because when they took our language, language is culture. They took our nationality.
Agreed. Now, that happened. That happened. This is July 1st, 2021. Remain angry, Don, about the day that we begin taking things you described. And for the next 25 to 50 years, just be mad and do nothing about it but be angry. Or we can position ourselves to do something. Which one would you recommend?
I think our people, God done blessed us now. You know, after Dr. King's assassination, he said we as a people will make it to the promised land. And
that's
we at that promised land.
What?
And what I saw, yeah, we at the promised land right now. We at the front door of it. And you know what I noticed the other day? You know, I'm Moorish American. I proclaim my nationality as Moorish American. But what I seen on the YouTube the other day about the 10 tribes that we came from in Africa, it's on YouTube. So they know what tribes we came from out of Africa. The DNA done show what tribes we came from. See what I'm saying? So now we have a chance to tie ourselves back into the family of nations. That's on us now. And how we self-destructing, we're getting caught up in this drug culture. We're killing ourselves. They ain't forcing us to kill ourselves. We're doing it ourselves.
Well, that's true. That's true. Now, may I say this? That's an interesting point you made in the context. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. You listen to Talk Straight. Our topic is One Nation Under God. Don, Malik El-Hash, Malik Shabazz, Brother Malcolm X, he described in his autobiography written by Alex Haley his experience when he went over to, when he took his jihad. As it said, every good Muslim will do, right? And he described how a lot of what he had learned was just erroneously false about white men, and that they were all dressed the same way, all prepared to pray and to prostrate themselves before he called Allah, so that they can humble them, be blessed. Now, that's interesting. Would that work here in America? Now, of course, everybody don't identify with Allah the most time.
But let's go there, Mr. Docker. Let's go there. You know, in the Bible, it said God gave man dominion over the earth, right?
So when you go to
the Moorish questionnaire, listen to this. Allah's the father of the universe. Allah's the father of the universe.
Okay.
See, but in the Bible, he said he gave us dominion over the earth. But in the Moorish question, he said Allah's the father of the universe.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? So we have to start thinking logically what's really being said. And it would be natural for some of our European brothers to catch on to Allah because he's the father of the universe. He's their father too. See what I'm saying? And we've been so miseducated. And Mr. Doc, listen to this. I got a cousin. He calls me every day on my messenger, and he talks about Jacob and Israel. And you know where I push it back to? Abraham, the grandfather. He wanted to keep running down to Jacob. I said, no, you Abraham, the father of many nations.
Yes.
See?
Now, Don, I began by reiterating the words of the framers, not because I love them so much personally, but it shaped the context of the American experience and in the Declaration of Independence. I'm going to speak to a point about Allah and the difference people may have in God or Jesus or Lord or Yahweh or Jehovah, right? Okay? And so what the framers skillfully did was to avoid embracing any particular religious identity. So you know the words. I know you know the words, but let's just go over them for the sake of the audience. Listen at how eloquently they framed them. I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who was the pen man. that we hold these truths. See, truth don't change for nobody. Is that right?
That's right.
Don?
That's
it's
right.
It's the truth, it ain't changed. It's real.
It don't remain the
100%
same.
All the time, right? We hold these truths.
That's right.
Self, what? In other words, you can look at it and see it for yourself. Watch what he said, Don, that all men are created equal. You notice that, let me keep going. They're created equal and endowed by their creator. I want to put a pin right there, big brother. Why didn't it say endowed by Yehovah Elohim, endowed by Allah, or endowed by the Lord God, or Hare Krishna, or Buddha? Why didn't it say that? Confucius. Why didn't it say that, Don?
Because the United States is based on freedom of religion. You know what I'm saying? And you have a right to, for your religious experience, you have a context to study in your religious experience.
Yeah, okay. Bring that out for me, big brother. So that's what the First Amendment really alludes to in terms of they will not espouse any particular religion. Is that right? That Congress will not.
Yes, sir. Give everybody a chance to worship up under their own vine and fig tree.
I see. That's where we are today, big brother, in 2021. Everybody has taken their corners, balled their fist up, and stood in a three-point stand ready to fight. Because they say, I'm defending my religious beliefs. But do we have to be at one another's throat? Can we follow the guidance of the framers to say that, listen, you do you, believe how you believe, but what brings us together is our common effort to what? Establish a government amongst ourselves and to give consent to the government among ourselves. Help me with that, big brother.
In today's context, Mr. Dockery, and what you're bringing up is a real good topic right now, especially where we are with the Trump era and the Democratic Party era. And I see exactly what's going on. And everybody would wonder why would Mr. Trump chase Mr. Pence? Well, Mr. Pence is Catholic. And for some reason, Mr. Trump knows that the Catholics done come in and got inside our government, and he knows that. And guess what? I'm aware of that because even though I studied with the Morris Divine National Movement and I studied Islamism, I listened to some of my Seventh-day Adventist brothers. They got a problem with that, and they see that. You see what I'm saying? So now we got the Catholics done infiltrated our government, and they're upset, all right? But the Catholics got a right to worship. The Protestants got a right to worship. Like you said, people in Buddha, Confucius, everybody have a right to study their religious, you know, principles. But when it comes to the government, we all are the United States of America. You know what I'm saying?
Now, that's my question to you, though. How do we agree on that, Don? How do we bring ourselves to respect the fact that we have different ideas about theological practice, right, liturgical form and things of that nature. But at the same time, what unifies us is that we're all Americans pursuing life, liberty, and happiness. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
How do we get that? Because I'm really concerned about the babies, because the babies are ready to fight, Don, because they know that they've been sold a bill of goods from generations prior, and this dog ain't hunting for them, man. It just ain't on for them. And I can understand why so many of them are angry or ready to swing and tear some up. Because they've been lied to. They've been cheated. They've been defrauded. They've been hoodwinked. Now, how do we tell them in 2021, baby, look here, for the next 10 years, here's what you focus yourself on. I like what you say all the time, Don, economic development. Go find yourself.
That's it.
A need by which you can produce in America, and you can establish the quality of life that you want. You feel what I mean? Talk to me about
this,
brother. Talk to me about that.
And you're right, Mr. Dockery. I just got my Acres USA magazine, and one little magazine was about him, which I called the magazine and told him I don't agree with him. You know what I'm saying? Growing hemp, like they're growing hemp. Because I was raised on tobacco. I don't agree with grazing tobacco like they raised it. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Because to me, that was passed down from us from slavery. So I believe more in growing produce because we can feed our children and our family. That's what I see. And I was going to say this too. You're hitting on some real heavy subjects tonight. The brothers that's in the government, and we in different secret societies, and we are up our, you know, like you said, trying to defend the United States. And that's what I was going to tell you. Today, out of that magazine, there's a color they didn't track in there, Mr. Dockery. And the brother police officer, I showed him that, and he said, man, I need a copy of that. Somebody along the way did not teach our young men about farming to produce food. Somebody dropped the ball on that. And when the young police officer saw it today, because see here in Selma in Dallas County with all this black soil, guess what's going on down here? These men are riding around here in pickup trucks with zero turns on trailers behind their truck, but they don't know what a colorizing tract is, but they got all this black soil. So they don't particularly know what how to farm. It's like you said, producing food for themselves.
Okay. You got somebody talking to you?
I don't know. I heard somebody cutting in online. You know what it is?
Oh, that must be Pastor Waller. I'm sorry. Pastor Waller, you there?
Okay.
We overheard your conversation a little bit there. But okay, give me one second. I'll come right back to you. So, Don, let me ask this question to you. Can you imagine young cats right now on the block slanging dope, selling and distributing fresh fruits and vegetables to people like they do dope? Can you imagine that, Don?
Yes, sir, I can. And, Mr. Dockery, like I said, somewhere in the educational system, we did not educate, train our young men in the vocation of growing food and producing food and marketing food. Somewhere we dropped the ball on that. You know what I'm saying? And
I hear you loud and clear.
Somewhere we dropped the ball on that because right here in Selma, again, I'm going to say it again, yesterday a young brother got killed in the drug thing. And like I said, we in Dallas County with all this fertile soil. And right here in Selma, you got young men coming from Chicago and New York and Detroit. But when they come, they bring that gang activity down here, and they're stuck. So that's what's going on. Somebody, we dropped the ball.
I'm not going to beat them up, Don. I don't like their behavior, and I don't like the outcome of their behavior. But I'm not going to beat them up. You know why? Because you have to ask yourself, what else do they know? You understand what I'm saying? What else do they
know? Yeah, but, Ms. Dockery, that's all they know. And we dropped the ball in the educational system some kind of way of not educating them how to grow food. Somewhere we dropped the ball, and we have to admit that we dropped the ball on that.
I would argue that when we lost control of the education of our young, that's how we lost the ball. See, when fathers, families, and communities, Negro, black, and colored folks, lost control of the educating of our children, that's when we lost the ball. We dropped the ball. We allow somebody else with other political agendas, economic agendas, and every other kind of teach our children, and we not take full control over that. That's when we dropped the ball.
I agree with you on that too, Mr. Doctor. I certainly agree with you on that. And when I say I agree with you on that, when that integration thing went down, it was just like we were sold into a situation. And you know what, Mr. Dockery, after the integration, after I got older, I come to learn out. And it was like today, I learned something today. These one-room schoolhouses that we have, I didn't know there was a schoolhouse for our people in Cheatham County, one school. A lot of stuff we didn't know. We were just sold in an integrated school, so nobody never told us from whence we came.
And there was a big fight politically over trying to keep the integration You know Thurgood Marshall. You know the fight that the Brown versus Board of Education had back in 1954 and 1955, those landmark battles, right? And people were going out of their way to fight. They had different views and positions on it. But nonetheless, Don, what was lost is that direct connection, that direct identification. There's a concept in education called likeness and learning, and it really speaks to how a student is able to identify with a teacher and the likeness that they have, that they can take that information and it reaches them. The teacher is more effective without teaching. You understand what I'm saying? And that was missing. That's missing. Now, you know, I tell you what, I remember when I was a little bed behind Pastor Waller, you know, my mama trying to raise all of us, and we were in the projects, and all of us in school at the same time, me and my siblings, for whatever reason, at the school clowning. Pastor Waller, principal.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, the principal kind of had a little sympathy for my mom and said, I'm not going to call her back up here again. I know she's trying to do something. I'm going to take care of this little nappy-headed rascal myself. Man, yeah. That Negro grabbed me, man, and slung me up against the wall. My feet left the ground, and I'm looking like, what?
Oh, man.
No, he ain't got me anything like that. And he gave me a few words. Look, Don, he told me, and I'm going to say it like this, Don. He told me, I'm going to help you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, and then I'm going to send you back to class. That reached me, Don. You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I understand what that brother said. I don't know if he's dead or alive now. Benoit Evans was his name. Benoit Evans. Never will forget.
I'm going to step back again, but I just didn't want to neglect the conversation. I'm going to fill in as soon as I take care of this.
All right.
I have to meet the person right here in just a second, so I'll be
tuning
back in just a minute. Yeah, I'll be
tuning
back in.
You just get in when you fit in. Don said get in when you fit in.
That's right, brother. I'm going to do it. All right, I'll be right back, okay?
Okay. All right. So, Don, to your point, though, I'm not necessarily suggesting that you have to be physically aggressive all the time, but when we create a construct, Don, you there with me?
Mm-hmm.
All right. When we create an environment and a construct by which we can, in a healthy way, connect and bond with our young men that are hurting, that are crying on the inside, many of them have undiagnosed depression. Many of them are looking for someone to help them find who they are and really what's their best skill, what's their purpose. That's what the acting out is all about. That's what we see when we see them acting out, Doug. And so, yeah, I think that makes the case. I know that makes the case for us to establish our own teaching and learning institution. Now, you don't have to be against nobody to do that, Don. All you're doing is being for our children. How about that, Don?
I certainly agree. Just like right now, Mr. Doctor, you know, it's strange you bring it up. Justin is 12. He's going now into junior high here at R.B. Hudson. Used to be a high school, and now it's a middle school. And him being Moorish American, and I told him today, matter of fact, just a few minutes ago, 2 or 3 hours ago, I said, son, you got to learn your 101s in the Moorish science. And then I was asking him why he's at the middle school, who is R.B. Hudson? And I was, you know, we were going over that, asking him that, who R.B. Hudson is. You know, our young people, you know, nobody never sits down with them and teach them, you know, when they go to school, when you see the name of the school, who is this person, R.B. Hudson? You know, and I was teaching him that today. I was telling him today, I said, R.B. Hudson sat on the board of Alabama Pensions and Savings Bank. I was teaching my son that today. And I said, Justin, you remember when we went over to Miss Jean Jackson where your grandfather strategized with Dr. King to write the vote? And he said, I said, can you remember going over to the house? And she would let me and you in the house. I said, that was R.B. Hudson's daughter's house. I said, the house next door to that was R.B. Hudson's house. You know what I'm saying? And so you have to teach your young folk, you know, even when they're in school, you know, why the school is named that, why the community is set up that way, the significance of that community. You got to spend time with your young men and teach them that. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Because they really don't know.
Okay.
See, like over at R.B. Hudson right now, Mr. Dockery, it would be good if DF Mission could come down and educate some of these young guys in the public school system here in Dallas County, because you got a lot of young guys here that done migrated from Chicago, bringing the gang activity down here, and that's all they know.
Okay.
That's all they know. They don't know nothing else but that. And they get caught up in that negative stream, and then they get destroyed. Because then, like you said, there's no father in the house to give that direction in a positive way where they can live in a positive way. You understand what I'm saying? So they get caught up in that negative cord.
Let's speak to the migratory pattern you just made reference to. They leaving from up north, coming down south. Isn't that a backwards, isn't that a reverse of what happened in 1950s where they left down south and went up north? And a lot of times they went up north to farms and to ghettos. You understand what I'm saying? But now they're coming back down to the south. That's because of the same driving forces on economic trends. See, the economic trends up north in these urban centers are such that they're not friendly toward individuals who have not educated themselves, positioned themselves to control the economy of their lives. In other words, to have resources, you understand what I'm saying, and to be in control of that. And so they're subject to gentrification. They're subject to redlining. You understand what I mean? They're subject to other methods by which you force people out of a certain geographic area or neighborhood, and they have to find a place somewhere else to go. They tore down the housing projects in Chicago. Can't go to projects no more. Cabrini Green ain't the same. Robert Taylor ain't the same. Stateway Garden ain't the same. You understand what I'm saying? Ida B. Wells is not the same. Where you gonna go then? That's all they knew. Well, the trend now is to move down south. And when you come down south, you bring all that you knew with. Then teach you nothing down there. About a brother by name, should it matter, white cat name, August Meir, wrote a pretty interesting book entitled From the Plantation to the Ghettos. And it's interesting. We can probably rewrite that thesis. From the ghettos back to the plantation. What do you think about that?
That's true, Mr. Doctor. Even though we went to the industrial city thinking that we was going to make it, come back south now, we're still in the economic because, I mean, let me break it down to you, Mr. Doctor. Okay, one of the primary institutions we would always talk about is the church. That's what we was taught, which was up under the National Baptist. And the National Baptist was birthed out of the Alabama State Missionary Baptist. Matter of fact, this Mr. Doctor, this morning, me and a lady lawyer bumped heads because one of her fellow attorneys is the attorney over at the school. And I was telling her this morning that the individual, you know, you get in position and all you see is money. And it takes you just see this money. But you don't understand that the money is earmarked to an institution to do a particular thing. Now, that money that's earmarked to the Alabama State Missionary Baptist, which is Selma University, you still got a board of directors and you got professors there that don't know how to institutionalize none of the school's historical work. You know what I'm saying? You know, Selma University's first president was Wood Small, who was an African-American. He was a blue coat. He was the president of the school, but he was an attorney. Well, that would make sense that you would name a law department in his honor. The first administrator of Selma University was Pettiforth it would be logical that you would institute an economic department after Pettiford, because Pettiford founded the Alabama Pennies and Savings. So that's what's going on. It's a lot of miseducation within those institutions with the individuals who claim that they know what they're doing, but they really don't know what they're doing.
So let me stop you for a second. I see something, John. I see something. I hear a lot of folks pushing for reparations, right? In other words, they want money. They want the government to give them money to pay them for their pain and suffering, essentially. Would it be a reasonable thing to say, if you want reparations and that money, use that money to build a school to educate your children to do what you're talking about? How about that? If you just got to get, personally, I'm not sure that that's a good direction to go in personally, and I'll be happy to have that dialogue with anyone. Personally, I have reason to believe that that's not the most effective way. But if you just had to do that with nothing else to do but push for reparations, why not get that so that Negro, Black, and colored folks can form their own institution, educational institution, that will provide the things that are needed? How about that, Don?
See what you just said again, Ms. Mark. It's going to be earmarked and set for a specific purpose. Yeah, Mr. Trump, them gave, yeah, you tell Mr. Trump, yeah, you offer them HBCU money, but the money didn't make it to develop a law department in San Francisco. It didn't develop the economic department. Tell Mr. Trump.
Listen.
Tell Mr. Trump that. And before Mr. Trump got there, I was here and right here in Selma, Mr. Doctor. I said, why are y'all going to put a guy in president? And he threw his gamble. He was pushing gambling.
Can I say this? Can you give him this much credit? Can you give him this much credit? He gave them the money in advance for 10 years. And I read where he told them, y'all may never come back and see me again before, because if I did 8 years, y'all could likely never come see me. But now the question becomes, what do they do with that money he gave them? So they wouldn't have to keep coming back every year asking for it. It's about how you properly use what you have, right, Don? Isn't that a responsibility that you just,
but guess
you
what, Mr. Doc?
What's that?
But when you give people money, listen to this. My wife today, we went to get some water just a few minutes ago.
Okay.
And she said, what's the racetrack doing over there? Yeah, Mr. Trump earmarked the money to the individual, but they got here building golf course racetracks with the money.
What's that? How that's going?
Yes, sir.
What?
Yep.
With that money?
And then,
money?
Mr. Doctor, she thought somebody was stupid. Then the brother started shooting at her the other day.
Oh, no.
People ain't stupid, Mr. Dockery. You're gonna put our child on a racetrack, and your child been lost.
Let me
all right.
Station ID. Got 35 minutes to go here. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Our brother Don out of Selma, Alabama, is with us. We're talking from the general topic, One Nation Under God. And in case you missed it, I laid the framework for our discussion in explaining that there were a number of ethnic groups. The first were the Native Americans or Paleo Indians. They were encroached by the Spaniards in the 1400s, and they began to make babies with them, and they had mestizo, right? And then from there came another group of Europeans that came during from England and other places and what happened. And from there, the Negro, Black, and colored folk were introduced to American soil, largely through the perfidious institution of slavery. But nonetheless, we all make up America. And guess what? You got a right to be happy right here. Even if you choose to go somewhere else, you got a right to be here. Don told about doing citizenship. Establishing that right other parts of the globe. But while you're here, I'm getting somebody's feedback, if y'all could take feedback. Take note of that. But while you're here, position yourself to benefit from those things. So that's what we're talking about. We got about 34 minutes to go. Pastor Waller, you back with us, sir. Would you care to come in or join us?
Yeah, I was just thinking about some things, Pastor Docky. I'd like to be able to say a whole lot of things I don't know anything about. But one thing that I am sure of, that there is a trap that's still laid out there.
All right.
And in order to be able to do something about it, you first have to recognize that there is one in many areas.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, enjoy what I've been hearing. I really take great interest in what I've learned about the trap. Not anything to take lightly daily, because as we speak right now, there are some young people that just walked in the trap.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, some mm-hmm. probably ran in it.
Yeah.
And that's because of my experience. I know I was a young kid before, so and it really gives me a chance to recognize how much work there's out there to be done. And somebody's gonna have to do it. Because if nobody remind them, then whose fault is it? You know, it's just like you gotta come out of the building.
Because
they're not inside the buildings for the most part. Thank God for those who really get a chance to learn what the trap is like. But there's a lot of them are not familiar with it. And so if it comes down to waiting for them to come inside of a building, it's going to be detrimental to the to the opportunity, I would say. And so the world and its way of doing things is designed, to trap people. And that's just the way it is. Sometimes one may think that a person should not have done something. You know, it's easy to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But then I look at what I know is so true. Had it not been there, then they wouldn't have been able to run it in no way. So is the trap real, or is it just something that sounds good? And the truth is what we're really seeking. That's what we have a right to seek. And how is it going to manifest itself? The truth had to be continually. Because the only way we can get free is that we got to get to the truth. And everybody does not know the truth. And that's why so many people are not free. And I'm not talking about people outside now. Now I'm talking about people on the inside. A lot of people don't even know nothing about the truth. So how can you get free if you don't know nothing about it? If you don't know, if I don't know that the truth is that there's a lot of people that's out here being put in a trap. So if they talk about equal rights and everybody's, you know, we're talking about equal, that doesn't sound like it's equal to me. It sounds like I got the advantage. I know I can do it. And here it is. And all of a sudden, captivity comes from it. It's just from an experience I've experienced. Go ahead.
I got a two-fold question for you. And Don, you take a stab at this too. The pastor's telling me that in this one nation, there's a trap. Okay. Do you have a right to avoid that trap? That's part one of the question, Pastor. And the second part is, what must you do to do so? So do you have a right in America to avoid that trap? Or what must you do to do so?
Mr. Doctor.
Yeah.
Mr. Doctor.
Come on. Help me out now. Y'all give me a...
What happens when you're a young man and you're in a house and your parents are limited to certain information? And like you said, you get caught in a trap. One of our young men here at the store just got caught in the trap. He wasn't a bad person. Matter of fact, I talked to his wife, and I didn't know he was doing – I'm here at the store, and I didn't know he was doing the things that he was doing. She found out about it. And what it was, the good old boy sheriff network sent one of their girls in here to work, and he got caught up in with her. Next thing you know, he's in jail. See?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to the owner of the store, and he was saying certain things around the girl, and he's thinking the girl really loves him. But he don't know that the girl is tied in with the good old boy ponies.
Okay.
So,
your question is, what if you're in a home and your parents don't know how to teach you properly? And
see
that
what I'm
caused
saying?
You getting, is that what you're saying? I want
to
make sure I'm
understanding. Yes, sir. And that's what happened to that young man. It's not his fault. You know, it's not his parents' fault. They never was educated about how to avoid that negative. See, I was taught. Now, before my father left, he taught me about that negative.
I got you.
And guess what? I listened for that negative.
Let me go back to my big brother, Pastor Waller, because he introduced in the conversation this trap in America. Pastor, I acknowledge that there are some booby traps. They've been laid for a long time, and they still exist on July 1st, 2021. Okay, I acknowledge it. Pastor, do you have a right to avoid those traps? And what is the, how do you do that? Help me with that, Brother Pitcher. We know they're out there. Can you hear me, Pastor?
Yeah. The only way to avoid a trap, it has to be because they don't know it. A lot of them don't know that the trap is out there. Using for an example. I didn't know it, and so the only way to avoid the trap is that they don't put the trap out there.
You say
That's the only way. There's no way to escape the trap, you know, because it's not meant to escape. For those who don't go into the trap, that's a beautiful thing. But for those who get captured in it, it's not because they, I'll come to you for a good example. It's not because I wanted to get in the trap. I didn't say, hey, let me see how this trap feels. You know, it was like, oh, man, that's amazing, man. I said, I didn't even see who set that trap. I said, they know how to do it. That's all I could say.
Do you mind if I probe that a little bit? Because this is key.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Suppose at the age of, let's say, 15 years old, you have a transformative figure that snatched you up out of the environment of the trap that you described, and they forced you to certain actions and behaviors that led to pro-social development and economic independence, and you being able to avoid that. And I ask that question because I know we can't go back and change your experience, but guess what? Gentlemen, the three of us have an opportunity to set course to change the experience of the young folk today. So, Pastor, what would that have done for you at 15 years old for you?
No, I don't understand the question. I maybe get run into him again. Let me see if I can get a hold to that.
I'm
question.
Saying if
what would have happened? I think you said
what would have happened if at 15, rather than your examples being drug dealers and hustlers and perhaps pimps and whatever was on the street that you saw that had such a strong and profound influence on you. If someone had come and taken you away from that and placed you in an environment where you learned how to be productive, perhaps start your own business, get a formal education, or establish yourself in something other than that, what can you imagine what kind of difference that would have made for you in your life where you are now? You understand my question?
But I don't know. I don't know that whether I would have been interested in it or not, because it didn't happen, as you said. But I do know that what's going on right here, right today, is so unique, it's so prevalent, it's so not known, and the power of it is working as we speak, is what I'm saying. And so that's the urgency of getting something done about it. Or, you know, how to do what's necessary right now. And I mean, even though we're talking about it right now, as I'm sit here and I say, well, man, it would be an awesome thing if I knew where the trash was at right now, and you know, I can go and I can do this and that another. But see, I already know it don't work like that.
Yeah.
You see,
yeah.
And that's unique. That's a unique part about it right there. So, but there is some good information that I can say, Pastor Dockery, that can do some good if people would learn to know that it's all right to get with somebody who know. And that's the problem that's going on right now. They're still in the same flow. It's something about denial. You know, a state of denial has so much power that it would let you know where the truth is and how one can be helped. And a person rather stay in denial and say, I ain't going to get mad. I know it's, I heard about it, but I ain't going to support that, because that state of denial has got so much power to it, because you don't want to stand up and get credit where it's due. I had to meet somebody not long ago. They wanted a book. They didn't know me. They didn't know me at all. And the person just wanted to support. And I thought that was the unique thing about that. Now, there are some that know me and refuse to get it. Not cases, but refuse to get one. So that's a form of a state of denial.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is after hearing about it. This is after knowing that certain things has been heard over and over and over again. So I'm talking about power now, the power of a concern or concerned people or a concerned individual, a concerned city. That's why I don't give that type of credit to the saying that they say about it. It's supposed to be one this up under this and all that. That's easy to say that. But what about that trap that's being set down? If you don't put the trap down, you would not get these people caught up in it. In that arena, there's no way you can have people caught up into the drug culture if you don't put it down. That's either you don't care or you're doing it intentionally. So it's not that, you know, it's not that they don't know. Now, the ones that's getting caught in the trap, they don't know. The ones that's setting the trap know it. That's where it's supposed to go.
So you and I can inform individuals, first, that the trap exists. Second, the nature of the trap. Third, how they can either avoid or free themselves from the trap. You see what I mean? And that's really what. Because, see, Pastor, we know that there are forces. We know that there are individuals. We know that there are interest groups that make money. And they're not all white either. They're not all white. It's some black folk making money off of black folk.
That's right.
And I'm going to talk straight tonight now. I'm going to go and talk straight tonight. It ain't just white people making money off of it. It's some Negro,
no,
black,
it ain't.
Color folk. A lot of money.
That's in that part. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Now, people been in the jam, see? And let's be honest about it.
And Mr. Dark.
Go ahead, Don. Go ahead. I finished my thought.
Yeah, Mr. Darker, there's a book called Dope. I want Mr. Pastor Wilder to listen to me. Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, which is a Frenchman, he wrote a book called Dope, Inc. Google it up. Dope, Inc. Whatever you do, Pastor Wilder, Google it up. And get they got new editions, and just get all of them. And what you're going to come to learn, that they know, that like you said, these traps are, they got it set up. And I like what you said. There is some lawyers in this town that knows about that book, but they don't care nothing about that book. You know what they care about? Get you through the legal system so they can make money with you in the prison system. They're making money, man. These lawyers down here that look like me and you in Selma, they don't care nothing about the community. There's a bunch of them in Selma. After Selma, right to vote. They don't care nothing about economically developing the community. None of them. They want you to go through the good old boy prison system because they're making money through the court system.
Now, gentlemen, y'all are really pantalating here. Now, you know, we sound like we almost identify who the real enemy is, huh? Uh-oh.
Hmm.
Either who set the trap or who's trying to keep you in the trap, right? We sound like we're almost hinting at that. Knowing that information, Don, knowing that information, how do we do the Harriet Tubman thing and set those folks free from the trap? See, watch this. The trap only works if you walk in it. It only works if you walk in it. Let me say that one last time. It only works if you walk. I'm thinking about what Jesus told the devil in the wilderness when the devil hit him up saying, look here, man, jump on off this thing. Angels don't catch you. You got power. And guess what was being tried in the wilderness, Don? His flesh. His flesh was warring with his spirit. And the spirit spoke out and said, listen, yes, it's true. I could jump. But because I'm an example to Dockery and to Don and Pastor Waller, they would die if they jumped. What I got to tell them is that it ain't wise to jump because men don't live by bread alone, by the
bread
appetite
alone.
To do what feels good. Are you with me? So,
yes,
so what am I saying? What am I saying? I'm saying that we're in a position to let, we just about know who's responsible for the trap now. I think we done pulled it out that fast. We done pulled a cup off the boat. Uh-oh. Ain't just white people invested in the trap.
Mm-mm.
Let's put the oil where the squeak is now. See? And whoever it is that's a victim of the trap, what you need to know is go the other way. Don't even go that way. I thought about the rat hungry for some cheddar cheese. And you know what they put on the edge of the leverage piece, that trap when you go in there, all you got to do is hit, just put a little bit of force on it, and it'll release it, and that thing, all right, got you by the neck. Are you with me? All Pastor Waller, that rat bone was a little cheddar cheese. But one little piece of cheddar cheese can get you hemmed up. I know I'm right about it. Listen, what we got to tell the rat is, man, I don't care how good that cheese smells. I don't care how good it looks. I don't care how hungry you are. You ain't got no business going over there. Don't mess with that cheese. All cheese ain't good cheese. I'm gonna stop right there. I thought to say something else, but I thought maybe I'm wrong. Y'all help me out. Correct me now. I got 16 minutes. Y'all correct me. Am I wrong about that, gentlemen?
That's right. That's right. You right.
But I'm hungry, though, Pastor Waller. I'm hungry, man. I ain't ate nothing in 3 days. I got to get me something to eat.
I'm going to say this right here, and I know this from experience.
Okay.
A lot of people that are getting money from this don't even know nothing about the trap.
Interesting. They don't know
about it? Don't know nothing about it. Not a thing. And getting money. No. I was one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
Just so happened. There's a lot of them out there like that right now as I speak. Don't have no clue about a trap. Now, I'm coming out of clue.
But something happened.
And the reason I say that.
Go ahead.
The reason I say that is because of the experience. As soon as the lockdown on you, like it did me, ain't no thought about no trap. Trap don't even exist. And that's how powerful the trap is. So, as again, if the person who put the trap there don't put it there, that's the way to get rid of the trap. And until then, the person has to learn how to know that. And that's where the job come in at. You know, and then those that are doing it, will at least know that there's one. It's like right now, the percentage is very high of the ones that still out there and don't even know it. It's pretty interesting too. But that's the truth. That's what makes us free, the truth, and that's what the truth is. And so if I want to stop doing harm and I know that I'm doing harm, it takes me to stop. It's not like, you know, I can't continue to do it. is that I just stopped because I've seen the harm that I'm bringing. That's what's going on. And not many are going to do that. You know, but there was a time when I didn't even know it was a trap. And I was getting the money. But I didn't know it was a trap. Sad to say.
All right. All right. All right.
And that's what's going on.
Okay.
And Jim, you got some.
I'm sorry.
Hey, Mr. Doctor.
Very young.
One second, Don. Let us finish this talk there, and then we'll go right to you.
Yeah, you got some very young people that's getting in it right now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're getting younger and younger. I had a guy that told me that he was 9 years old in Florida. And he was in Georgia at nine.
Okay.
That's a lot. Okay. Getting younger and younger, I see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's amazing.
Okay.
That's amazing.
Okay.
It hurts. It hurts to know it. It definitely hurts to know it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I say you got to get out of the building. The building is like, the building ain't working. And he ran him out one time and got back in there.
Okay.
Back in the building.
All right. Let me catch Don before he loses his talk.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, brother?
Oh, no, I was getting ready, but I was going to say something to Pastor Wallace. In the book, Dope Inc., all the brothers that's out here in games, it was set up by the Catholic Church. It's in the book. It ain't here. God, if you're the game, you tied in with the Catholic Church. You're the criminal that killed the Catholic Church. That's not here.
Okay.
My friend today from Venezuela, guess what he said to me today, Mr. Doctor?
I don't know. What he said?
Guess what Frank Diaz said to me today? You going to kiss the Pope ring? I said, no, sir.
Okay.
He said, why? I said, because I've been down there in Miami around the Argentinians. And I've seen an Argentinian woman look like me and beautiful. That Pope up there from Argentina, he don't look like their sister from Argentina. But no, I am not going to kiss his ring.
Okay.
It's a trap. I'm not going to fall for your trap on ABC and NBC and CBS. I don't fall for your trap.
Well, y'all laid some on the floor. I put three questions on the floor. I answered one, how to become an American citizen. Be born here or be naturalized. The second question that I posted and I promised to answer was, given all the turbulent experiences of minorities throughout American history, should members of the majority population be held responsible for what happened in the past? You could blame them, you could point the finger, and you can hold them accountable. But nobody's going to do for you but you. And the more time and energy you waste on putting blame on somebody else and not taking responsibility for your course and your plight, you're wasting time to get where you need to be. They got theirs. You need to get yours. The third question, what does Native American, Hispanic, European, African American share in common as citizens of the United States? Anybody that's a United States citizen have a right not to be ostracized, not to be trapped, not to be abused or anything. And when you know that and you know how to exercise your right, Native American, Hispanic, European, African American, whatever you may identify as an ethnicity, you can do something in America. Hold them to account on that. So those were those three questions that we asked. Man, gentlemen, great conversation. I appreciate y'all joining us here. And we're trying to keep it alive. We're going to keep the conversation going and alive. That's why I'll be in touch with you, sir, to try to talk about some of the things that we got going on here coming. I can't believe it's July 1st, though. Man.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you.
Yeah. Yep.
Man.
It's upcoming, man.
Let's do this. Don, give me something that I can hold on to, Don. If I'll never, ever see you again, give me something I can hold on to that'll take me to the next level. Give me a final thought. You got 8 minutes.
You said something.
8 minutes.
Mr. Doctor, you just said something a while ago about reparations. We got a crowd down here hollering for reparations. But that same crowd is, like you said, laying the trap. Same crowd. You hollering for reparations, but at the same time, you helping the man lock your children up.
Oh, my
yes, sir. Going on right here in Selma, Alabama.
I hate you. Whether you're doing it quietly or openly, you'll help your part of the problem. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Go ahead, Doc. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But Ms. Dawkins, that's exactly what's – and when you brought that up, I was sitting there thinking, I said, yeah, they're hollering for reparations, but at the same time, you're working for the good old boys to set your folk up. Going on right here in Selma. And it's strange you brought up, and I was sitting there thinking about the individual. Yeah, we hollering for reparations. But at the same time, you helping the good old boy down here put the dope out here on the street. You go to court with them to help put your boys in jail. It's going on right here in Selma.
When you know the truth, Jesus said, John 8:32, you can be free. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. I ain't trying to add to the Bible. I'm paraphrasing a little bit. When you know the truth, you ain't got to be bound. You ain't got to be trapped. You ain't got to be enslaved. You can be free. Wow. Okay. All right, Don, I'm going to take that with me, man. I'm going to take that with me. Pastor Waller, put the icing on the cake for us tonight, big brother, as we get ready to leave out of here on this July 1st, 2000. Tuesday night, July 1st, 2021.
Fast? Man. Yeah, man. Time sure do roll. And when time rolls like that, it just present things to brand new people that comes into society, and it gets excited. It gets exciting when they see things, when they hear things. And so here the word says, faith cometh by hearing.
Uh-huh.
Hearing by the word of God. I just would love to see people get excited about that. Because if we don't know the power of the eyes and the ears, watch what the world is doing and we'll discover. It's because of what they're hearing and what they're seeing that they're going for. But the word does say, if any man desire to come after me, he said, let him take up his cross and daily follow me. And that's the thing that's missing. A lot of people are not willing to, and so therefore, that's why the world is in the predicament that it's in now. I'm talking about the people that I have to see and realize that, man, look at what I just left. Look at what I just came out of. God is so merciful. I just want to thank him again to allow me to appreciate what I was brought out of. And now I got a chance to see clearly now. You know, there's a song, Pastor Doc, they used to say, I can see clearly now. The rain is
that's
over. you know, see all
yes.
the stickers that was in my way, you know.
Mine.
And I never thought that I could bring that song up, but it's so fitting now that I don't have to worry about that any longer. I know that that was a trap. So now we're just going to encourage, as we have heard everything tonight on the show, we thank God for everybody who had a chance to talk, and for those who are just listening, we're going to invite you and encourage you to come back in on the next episode, which is on a Tuesday night. And we just want to make sure that we offer somebody to not hesitate. Just step right on in. We want to hear what you got to say, and then we'll take it from there. But Pastor Doc, you keep doing what you're doing. Keep bringing that good information out there, man. And I tell you what, somebody's going to be made free. Because you said it earlier, if you know the truth, you can get free.
Oh, yeah.
I yield back
to
you on that note, my brother.
Well, thank you, sir. And we're going to, as he said, meet you back next Tuesday night for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Ruben, Dr. Pastor Richard, co-host, Dr. Don out of Selma, Alabama. Thank you all. We'll see you Tuesday night, 7 o'clock p.m. Funkadelic said, one nation under a groove.
gonna be doing the wrong thing. I'm the only guy. You could all be me.